From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 11th day of October, 2021. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Mark Russo with Everstream Analytics out of Chicago. Along the way, Frayne Olson will be here to discuss tomorrow's USDA WASDE and crop production reports and what they might mean for the marketplace, and that'll all happen on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn at $5.33, finished 2.5 cents higher on the day. The March contract at $5.42 1/4, up 2 3/4. And the May contract 2 3/4 higher. It settled at $5.47 1/2 a bushel for the corn. November soybeans, $12.28 1/4, down 14 3/4. January, $12.39 3/4, 14 1/2 lower. The March at $12.50, down 13 3/4. The bean meal at $3.17.10, down $1.60. The bean oil, $60.51. $1 lower for the day. Soft red winter wheat in the December contract 2 1/4 lower at $7.31 3/4, and the hard red at $7.34 1/2, down 3 on the afternoon. Live cattle futures at $130.17 1/2 in the December, 7.5 cents lower. November feeders were 57.5 cents higher at the end of the day at $161.72 1/2, and lean hogs at $80.17 1/2, down $1.32 1/2 on the afternoon. Crude oil at $80.49 a barrel, $1.15 higher. Gasoline up $0.01 3/10 at $2.37 9/10 of a cent. The gold futures at $1,755.10, down $2.30 for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 115 points higher at 34,512. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to discuss the marketplace. Hi, Kurt. Thank you on this Monday. Tomorrow morning, USDA at 11 a.m. will release Central Time the WASDE and crop production figures. Let's start there and think about what that meant for today's marketplace, or maybe there was something else at play in the spread in the corn and the soybeans.
Well, first of all, you got to remember from now on out, it's bullish Monday, even though the beans and the wheat did not close higher. So we're going to be positive from here on out since we are at the traditional benchmark of Columbus Day, Todd. So we'll cheer the market on as we move forward. Yes, supply-demand report out tomorrow. We'll have the corn carryout estimate. It's close to about 1.432 billion versus 1408, up, you know, about 25 million bushels from last month. The bean ending stocks projected to be about 300 million bushels versus 185. It's supposedly going to be up 115 million bushels. And the wheat stocks are going to be lower. They're going to average trade estimates about 576 million bushels versus 615 million bushels. And the significance of the wheat number, more than anything, is we've been floating around 900 to 1 billion bushel wheat carryout for years and years and years. And being this tight kind of signifies that wheat futures need to maintain a premium in here to get the wheat in the ground here this fall. And even this coming spring, not only the world wheat production numbers and ending stocks number, they're a little tighter. It seems like they're saying we raise wheat in every country of the world, but we've got strong demand for wheat and a little smaller crop of wheat in every country of the world. So it'll be kind of exciting, interesting to see what they do with the world supply demand balance sheet. Also, tomorrow there, Todd.
Yeah, we'll have those up on our website at willag.org right at 11 o'clock. You can check them out because it's bullish Monday. That's what you said. So oats knows, right? Up 19 1/4 cents. Are you advising stocking up on Cheerios at this point? Because it's at $6.73 a bushel.
Oh, anything with oats, Cheerios, oatmeal. Yeah, it's on a tear in through here. Unbelievable. New all-time highs for oats. We're seeing the oat-corn spread at historically wide levels in through here. It's just in a market of its own here all by itself. But, yeah, the old saying, oats knows, and as long as oats maintain some leadership in through here, we kind of feel there's some support underneath the marketplace. Now, We're not recommending or seeing a huge up in corn bean values right here at the moment, but we feel there's some underlying demand underneath the marketplace. Even looking at the outside markets, crude oil up over $80 a barrel. You know, you look at copper on a roll in through here. The Dow's up and down here for a little bit, but the old saying, a rising tide floats all ships, I think it's going to be kind of supportive here in the whole grain complex. Thing is, too, harvest has moved along rapidly in through here. Yields have been kind of a mixed bag in through here. For the most part, the later corn's a little better than the early corn, but corn yields are still kind of disappointing. Bean yields kind of over the map with this moisture we're seeing here. That's going to give guys a little bit of an edge in here to go back and start cleaning up the beans. Tuesday afternoon's harvest progress report expected to show corn and bean harvest both as a nation up in the upper 40% complete area.
What are you telling producers when they call? I take it they've had some time, given the rainfall, to call and ask what your suggestions are for any of their crops that need to go across the scale, and they might have maybe 10 weeks to or 10 days to a few more than that to make a decision about whether they should sell it or store it.
That's the great question this time of year, and that's the great saying for this time of the year. Should I store or should I sell? So we're they made a song about that, I thought.
I believe they did.
Anyway, yes, 7 to 10 days. Most of the calls are, I've got between now and tomorrow. What should I do? So it is kind of crunch time on whether to store or not. That depends on your own particular situation. If you're not sold up and you've got a good basis, there's nothing wrong with moving some cash here at these historically high levels, then doing some replacement on the board. That way you've got plenty of cash flow to work with going into this winter. We feel we're going to have the traditional up from now until year end. I feel storage will pay between now and then. But after the first year, it's going to hinge on that southern hemisphere and whether or not China really steps up and buys or not, Todd.
Yeah, a lot has to do with logistics, I suppose, between now and then, and whether we can make up some exports to China, whether China has the need, I suppose, for demand for exports for both corn and soybeans.
Oh, they've got a huge, huge demand. They're just kind of, I think, flying under the radar here. If you look at the weekly sales, the sales are there. I believe the grain's flying underneath the radar. There's been some shuffling around. But you talk about freight and so forth. It's the cargo ships that have the problem or the backup. These grain vessels are empty and ready to go. When you look at the backflow with this high freight, these cargoes, they're going to put some grain in those to justify the higher transportation rate and have a backload. Just like if you're a trucker, you just don't drive from Illinois to California and come back empty. So we just need to see some confirmation of some larger amounts to get the trade excited to keep the meat market hopefully above $12 here.
Hey, thanks much.
Very good. Take care.
You too. Kirk Kimmel is with Bates Commodities. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Frayne Olson, agricultural economist from North Dakota State University in Fargo, now joins us. Thank you, Frayne, for being here. Tomorrow, the USDA on Tuesday at 11 a.m. will update the crop production figures for the United States. Those will be for corn and soybeans and the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate tables as well. What will you be watching?
Well, obviously, the big news or the big story will be the yield estimates, what kind of adjustments will be made. Right now, if you compare what the pre-report industry estimates are relative to what we got last month, there's some small adjustments, but I know state by state, there's going to be some bigger questions. You know, most of the summer we've been looking at, you know, problems in the Western Corn Belt and some very, very fantastic growing conditions in the Eastern Corn Belt. So the underlying question, will the numbers in the East compensate or offset for some of the losses we see in the West? And I know we, up here in North Dakota, you listen to some yield reports coming in. They're all over the board. So I want to make sure that everybody understands there's a huge variation in yields, but in general, they're coming in a little better than we had expected. So even on average, a little better than we had first expected for both corn and beans. Now on the margin, you know, the North Dakota numbers probably won't make that much of a difference, but I know there's other Western Corn Belt states we're going to be watching pretty closely. The one thing I am also trying to kind of back calculate out of what the trade is expecting, don't overlook the potential adjustments on the demand side, in particular in the WASDE report. When you look at what the trade is expecting on the yield side, and you would look at the, in particular, the numbers for soybeans on what they expect ending stocks to be out of this report, implied in that is that the trade is expecting some downgrade or some reductions in our export numbers. I really don't see, for soybeans in particular, I don't think the crushing demand will change much, but there is still some uncertainty on the demand base in particular for soybeans and the export pace going into China. The Chinese now in the northern part of China is having some power issues, which is impacting their ability to be able to crush soybeans. Soybean meal prices are exploding, putting a lot of pressure on profit margins for livestock, in particular hogs. Now, again, remember that almost all of the soybeans that are crushed in China are imported from either U.S., Brazil, or possibly Argentina. Most of their domestic production of soy is for food use, food products. The imports are primarily almost exclusively used for the crushing demand. So if we start to see a slowdown in crushing demand and crushing pace coming out of China, that could also potentially slow down U.S. exports into the Chinese market. So we can't take our eye off the ball on the demand side. We're in the process now of shifting very quickly from kind of the uncertainty with production towards what does this demand base look like and how quickly can we get some of this product moved through the system. So I know the focus will primarily be on yields and the production numbers, but we can't lose sight of some of the adjustments that may occur on the demand side also.
When we've had discussions about the export markets, particularly for soybeans, a lot of it surrounds Ida, the shutdown, relatively speaking, a loss of a month in the New Orleans ports. I'm wondering, and the loss simply because it's rather cyclic that, you know, coming out of the United States, New Orleans, in through January and then switch to South America, and here we switch to shipping corn out of those ports. Is there a similar logistic and cyclic function that goes out of the PNW for the soybeans and other products that come from your part of the world?
Yes, there is. We tend to see some very, very heavy soybean shipments during our harvest period into and through January. By the time we get into February, as you suggested, not only in the Gulf, but in the PNW, we start to see kind of this seasonal shift to, there's still a lot of volume going out of PNW with soybeans, but it drops off fairly quickly and shifts to corn. We also pick up some more wheat exports. Now, with the problems you're having in Ida, combined with some very, very high ocean freight rates, there's been a lot of pressure to push more corn and soybeans through the PNW ports just because of logistical issues. Again, not only the backlog of both barges on the inbound, but also vessels being waiting to be loaded on the outbound. But just with the freight rates, the ocean freight also putting an incentive to try and get more volume pushed through the PNW. And where does the PNW typically pull their corn and soybeans from? Yes, it's North Dakota, South Dakota, and then parts of Nebraska. So basis levels coming out of the PNW have been very strong for this time of year. That's signaling, again, trying to move some additional corn and beans from kind of non-traditional Western Corn Belt states like Iowa, trying to pull some of that grain into the PNW to get those movements and fill those orders. So the backlog in the Gulf because of Ida is also impacting our basis levels up here pretty tremendously.
What do you expect tomorrow exactly?
You know, I guess I was looking at the numbers. My gut tells me I think the trade has it pegged pretty close. I think we'll see a small reduction in the corn numbers nationally. Again, state by state, it might vary. I do expect a slight increase in the soybean numbers for, in particular on the production side, the yields. Personally, I'm going to be watching that demand base pretty closely because, again, implied in those ending stocks estimates is a slight softening of demand for both soybeans and corn, but in particular soybeans. So, you know, even though it may not be tremendous shock value, I think there's going to be some information in there that we need to consider will change some attitudes as we move forward.
And that doesn't count for softening in the new marketing year.
Correct. And that's, again, we're in this kind of funny time where we're transitioning from U.S. production to this demand base, and more importantly now, what's going to happen in South America. The trade estimates, as well as most of the USDA numbers, are projecting some pretty substantial increases in planted acreage for both corn and soybeans out of Brazil. If the Brazilian soybean crop comes in as expected, it would be, again, another record production. There's also pretty substantial rebound, expansion of planted acres in corn, but then a rebound in yields because the Brazilian corn crop this last cycle, especially their Safrinha crop, had some yield issues, had some yield drag. But again, if you plug in trendline yields coming out of Brazil for both corn and beans, looking at some pretty massive numbers, if I'm a Chinese buyer, I'm looking at this information and saying, well, I'll buy enough from the U.S. to be able to get through until that Brazilian crop comes in. Now, I do know there's some weather issues. There's some pretty dry areas in central Brazil that people are kind of watching right now. We still have a long growing season, so I'm not willing to bank on the record yields that everybody's talking about right now, but it is something to watch and watch very closely.
Hey, thank you. We'll talk with you again in another month.
All right. I appreciate the invitation.
That's Frayne Olson. He is an agricultural economist at NDSU, North Dakota State University Extension in Fargo. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Monday, let's check the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's with Everstream Analytics. Thanks, Mark, for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Looks like there's a pretty good storm making its way across a portion of the Midwest. Can you tell me about that to begin with, please?
Sure. This week features a significant rain system to start out the week here across the nation's midsection. And also, not only will it produce an abundance of moderate to, in some cases, heavy rainfall here in the Corn Belt, but also looks to produce some severe weather. And so, yeah, this time of year is actually kind of a secondary window of severe weather throughout the year. Obviously, spring and early summer is the main window, but you can have severe weather outbreaks in the fall. And what we're going to see here at the start of the week is going to be kind of a classic fall outbreak of severe storms.
Yeah, so I saw even today, we may have some severe storms late this afternoon in our part of the world. I would like to back up just a little bit into the northwestern part of the Corn Belt, where there was some thought that they might have a fairly large storm, could turn colder, and maybe even have some snow. I don't think that was the case, but how much rainfall did they get and can they expect there, especially because they're far deeper into drought than any other part of the Midwest?
Yeah, for the northwest portion of the Corn Belt over the weekend saw significant rain activity totals, several inches in a few areas. And coming up, there will be additional opportunities for primarily liquid precip, maybe a little bit of snow in some of the higher elevations of the high plains and the western Dakotas, but actually the bigger snows look to be across areas of the northern Rockies. So this next 7 days is really the next opportunity for some improvement in the just continued major drought conditions there. But it does look like next week, actually things dry out. So does not look to be the start of a long duration drought improvement window, but rather a short one.
Is this the beginning of a series, and I know you said not next week, but a series of rainfall events across the whole of the Corn Belt this week?
Yeah, we're seeing two systems here, obviously today's, but then a second one coming up on Thursday. But all in all, it's really this week compared to next week looks to feature the most widespread significant rains and heaviest totals here across the Corn Belt.
They're the hard red winter wheat growing regions of the nation picking up rainfall too?
They are involved with this with these storm systems tracking across the middle of the country and hoping to continue to improve soil moisture from Nebraska and Kansas all the way down through the Texas Panhandle. When all is said and done, there will likely be at least a few pockets that could potentially miss out, but the main item is that this is a opportunity for further contraction of dryness across the central and southern plains.
It is spring in the southern hemisphere, planting time in Brazil. Wheat is coming out of dormancy or has in Argentina. Can you tell me about those two nations?
Yeah, Brazil continues to see a normal start to their rainy season here. The rains really have kicked in over the past couple of weeks. And going forward, the vast majority of summer crop acreage across Brazil will pick up significant rainfall, or in the least normal rainfall, and enough to just continue to push more planting progress across the region. The one area that, at least of all of Brazil, will shift a little bit drier is Rio Grande do Sul in far southern Brazil. And that drier pattern looks to kick in next week, but that's not of any concern at that time. At this time, and also that dryness in Rio Grande do Sul, that is actually building in from Argentina, which, of all of South America, Argentina is the prime area to watch right now, with the continued drier than normal conditions. So those drier than normal conditions have been in place in recent weeks and look to stay in place at least through the balance of October.
How much of the growing region do you think that covers in Argentina?
It does cover the vast majority. For example, looking at some of the recent rainfall totals, we've calculated that over the past 30 days that the core of the belt has received less than 25% of normal rainfall. So obviously, the core of their belt is a small area, but obviously they are going to need more precipitation opportunities coming up as more planting of summer crops takes place.
And one final question, because I know you follow this closely. What are logistics and natural gas outlooks look like to you for the United States?
Yeah, first off, for logistics, obviously we have the continued supply constraints here and overall transportation delays just due to the continuation of impacts from COVID and supply demand imbalances. And so now as we begin to approach winter, then beginning to introduce some of the winter risk that could disrupt transportation, such as winter storms, some of which we're seeing across the western U.S., as well as still potential for some tropical risks at this late stage of the season. As for the energy outlook here, obviously, a lot of sensitivities due to the global energy situation. And certainly, this winter's temperature expectations will be very sensitive. It's looking like much of October here is going to actually be a warmer than normal October from a population standpoint here in the U.S. But other areas of the globe, Europe, as well as China, are seeing some fall cooler conditions that are at least helping to increase heating demand in those specific areas at this time of year.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. He joined us here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.